Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney.
No, it is not a mistake. We actually are back for another half hour, special edition of half hour of Medically Speaking Radio. And it comes from the recent events at Fort Hood, Texas. And what we're going to do, Larry and I are going to be speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Philip Holcomb. Dr. Holcomb, are you on the air?
I am.
It's good to hear your voice. Can you tell us where you are and what it is that you're doing right now in your career?
Yeah, I'm currently at Tripler Army Medical Center, and probably just at the beginning I should make sure that I say that I'm not the official public affairs office for the United States Army, and anything I share is my personal opinion, not the opinion of Tripler or the United States Army. But so I'm currently serving at Tripler Army Medical Center in Honolulu, Hawaii, as the deputy chief of our Department of Psychology and as the director of training for our clinical internship program. Also was recently appointed in March as the national training coordinator for psychology training programs in the Army.
And, Doc, this is Larry Finney. I understand congratulations are in order?
Yeah, I just pinned on Lieutenant Colonel yesterday. Date of rank was effective 1 November.
Fabulous. So what does a Army psychologist typically do?
Well, it certainly depends on where you're at in your Army career. Captains are usually assigned to a brigade combat team, where they are responsible for the psychological health for about 4,000 to 6,000 soldiers. And in doing that psychological health care, we'll provide both assessment and treatment of various psychological health issues, develop preventative programs, and work with other agencies in implementing those programs to make soldiers healthy from the get-go in terms of psychological health. They'll also consult with commanders on both organizational issues and individual soldier and family issues to ensure that the unit is as combat ready as it can be. As they progress in their careers, like I'm now a lieutenant colonel, they can become heads of clinics within the hospitals. I'm currently in a training capacity, so as well as providing patient care. We also have psychologists that serve in special operations units and can really specialize in that side of the house as well. So it's very diverse in terms of what Army psychologists can do.
Now, do your patients typically come to you first, or is there a broad spectrum screening process that the Army goes through to look at all of its recruits?
The answer to that would be yes, in terms of the Army has, within the last few years, launched several initiatives to increase the likelihood that we'll be identifying people who need help. Part of that includes having behavioral health officers available at soldier readiness processing centers before they deploy, as well as integrating psychologists into primary care settings so that as they come in for regular medical needs, that we increase the likelihood of identifying soldiers who need help. The Army also has something called the post-deployment health assessment that is done as soldiers are leaving theater or right when they get back from theater, that asks several questions about mental health with regard to symptoms of depression, symptoms of PTSD, risk assessment kinds of questions. And then 90 to 180 days after, there's something called the post-deployment health reassessment that's done to yet provide another screening opportunity to try to identify the needs of soldiers. So there's multiple programs, lots of them out there.
Yeah, I have a son in the military. He's currently serving in the U.S. Marine Corps, has been deployed to Iraq and so forth. But I get from him that there's a general reluctance of any service person to raise their hands and suggest to anyone up the food chain that they may be having mental or emotional issues because it might be perceived as a sign of weakness or unfitness for duty or that well, maybe it's just the Marines, but this suck it up and move on attitude.
You know, I certainly think that is something that we are constantly battling with in the Army, is addressing that stigma associated with going to a psychological health professional. I think it's something that the Army, I believe, is reflective of the culture in general. And people think differently, I think, about going to see their medical doctor than they do about going to see their psychologist or their social worker or their psychiatrist. So just as the general population struggles with that, and people still to this day, many of them experience some embarrassment when they think about sharing that they're going to see a psychological health professional, the Army has that same struggle as well. And there's been a number of studies done that are really groundbreaking in terms of history. They've been done by mental health advisory teams, in which researchers have gone into the various theaters of war, Iraq and Afghanistan, handed out surveys and asked questions that included looking at the very areas that you're asking about right now with regard to stigma. So there clearly is still a stigma out there that we're working to address. That's why the Army's done some things like included behavioral health professionals in the primary care settings. Recently, the Army had a question on their security clearance about, have you been to see a mental health professional in the last, I can't remember exactly the phrasing of the word, but in the last 5 years or something like that. And they've actually done away with that questionnaire. If the visit to the psychological health professional has at all been related to a deployment issue, that question no longer applies. And the Army's also recently launched some programs that include top leadership talking about suicide prevention and those kinds of things. So stigma certainly is clearly still a problem and an issue. The Army's working hard to tackle it, and as a psychologist in the Army, I can tell you that I have never ended the career of a soldier who has come to see me that the soldier did not feel like they needed to be done providing the services as well. And the reason is we don't want to be known. My understanding is the Marines have a name for us. They call us the wizard. You know, their fear is they come to us and they disappear. And actually, even in theater, I believe the number was something as high as 95 or 98% of soldiers in theater who came to talk to mental health professionals in theater of war were actually returned to duty. So our goal as psychological health professionals in the service is actually to increase the combat effectiveness of units. And we don't do that if we're damaging the careers of folks who come to see us. So we take confidentiality very, very seriously. We know that we're done on an installation if our reputation becomes one of facilitating stigma. So we work very hard at that. I think that the problem is a large one that really will include a need for cultural shift, both in the civilian community as well as in the military community.
Dr. Holcomb, you currently are at the base there in Tripler, but you yourself, like this Dr. Hassan that is in the news right now, we're in Iraq. That's where he was going to be deployed. Your roles in Iraq, in theater, were they the same?
As in garrison, you mean?
this Major Nadal Hassan was a psychiatrist who was going to be deployed. I believe it was to Iraq.
Afghanistan.
Oh, so you're asking, was my role the same as what Nadal Hassan's would have been?
When you're in the theater.
Yeah, I couldn't answer that question because I'm not sure what his role would have been because we do multiple different things, but I can tell you what I did. I'm not sure what he was going to do, but what I did is provide services to soldiers to help keep them in the fight, keep them ready to go, and developed programs to help the unit in a preventative way to support each other, and consulted with commanders on the psychological fitness of soldiers, provided briefings and things like sleep hygiene and those kinds of things to have a proactive response. But I'm not at all sure what they were going to have Major Nadal do. I really don't know.
Okay. We do have to take a little break for a commercial, but after we get back, we'll be speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Philip Holcomb at Tripler and continue our discussion of psychology in the Army.
And we're back from the break with Medically Speaking Radio, Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney. We're talking with Dr. Phil Holcomb, a Army psychologist, and can we just refer to you as Dr. Phil? Would that be okay? Is Dr. Phil
about that? Okay, call me whatever you want.
How's that working for you?
You know what? We never made the local connection with Lieutenant Colonel Holcomb.
Okay, well, why don't you fill that in for us? And okay. I have a question for him after that.
But. Okay. Yeah, this is KHI AM 950, the voice of the foothills, and you have a connection to our area here, right?
I do. I lived out there for about a year and a half and attended the Parkside Nazarene Church with you all and enjoyed working with now Lieutenant Colonel, then at that time Major Eric Fry. I was the California National Guard state psychologist for that year and a half and really enjoyed our time out there.
And then you actually were deployed from this location.
Yes, I came back onto the active duty side of the house in October 2006, was in Hawaii for 10 days to process to head out to Iraq.
The incident at Fort Hood is rather tragic, and in a military setting particularly. And I'm wondering how common it is for serviceman-on-serviceman violence, or what kind of things lead to that. So coincidentally with the Fort Hood incident, which could have been ideologically caused, there was an incident at Camp Lejeune where they recently found the body of a young Marine, and another Marine is being held in connection with a possible homicide. How frequent is what we in the civilian world would refer to as workplace violence? All this is workplace violence writ large. How often do you encounter that type of thing in your work?
In my particular experience within the military, I have never been at an installation where a soldier has killed another soldier. I've been in for about 13 years.
I wasn't thinking particularly of homicide, but just, you know, fights or, you know, physical altercations. Is this a fairly common type of thing or not?
Well, you know, this is a purely a guess on my part, but my guess is it's probably similar to the civilian population. I do think that there's more information about it, and people can Google the MHAT studies, the Mental Health Advisory Team studies. They can Google those on the intranet, and there are some questions, I believe, in there about frequencies of people getting into fights and into disagreements. As you know, the military is a very structured organization with regard to authority structure, and I think that the key to preventing violence like that is that authority structure and respecting of that authority structure.
Yeah.
So I think your question is probably a difficult one to answer in terms of my ability to compare to the civilian population in terms of what's common and what's not common, I wouldn't be able to speak to without going to the library myself and again looking up the MHAT. I do think that it's important to point out that the Army does everything it can with regard to maximizing the relationships between folks. We have equal opportunity advisors, the soldiers as they're progressing up the ranks, as they're going through the various leadership courses are taught basic interpersonal skills in terms of how to lead and those kinds of things. I certainly don't think that this Fort Hood incident is at all an indication that there's more frequency of these issues in the service than there is elsewhere. I am personally shocked and in horror that anybody would do this to one of their comrades or to a fellow human being at all, and certainly to our service members who are so willingly putting their lives on the line to defend the Constitution of the United States. And then as an officer myself, I'm further horrified. And then as a behavioral health officer in the military, I'm again further horrified. This is something I never, ever would have dreamed or contemplated to have ever happened in the service. So my heart goes out to all of those family members and soldiers, and my prayers as well.
So this is probably such an outlier event. You know, it's obviously going to make news, but it's rather atypical. What kind of things do you normally come across when service people come to you with issues or problems? What is really more, and say, as opposed to the general population?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, in terms of post-traumatic stress disorder, the service members, the numbers seem to vary anywhere from, depending on the study, from 4% to 26% within our Army population. So I do think that there's a higher rate of that. My understanding is the civilian population, you're looking at about an 8%, because obviously war brings about increased probabilities of running into these life-threatening circumstances, seeing the horror that's associated with war. So we certainly see that. And I have two specialties. One is military psychology, obviously, and the other is child and family psychology. So I get to see a mixture of the typical things that might happen in terms of psychological health concerns with soldiers, as well as with their family members. So I really see the Army as a smaller representation of the larger civilian population. So you figure about 17% of soldiers who have been deployed will experience some kind of psychological health issue. The other thing that we're tending to see, I think, more heavily in our Army population is sleep problems. They go over there to Iraq, and their sleep is faces considerable environmental and I'll say circadian rhythm kinds of challenges while they're over there. And when they come back, some of them have some difficulty getting back into healthy sleep patterns. So we can see difficulties with sleep and those kinds of issues. And then sometimes they're experiencing relationship difficulties as well with regard to marriage and girlfriends or boyfriends and those kinds of things. War increases stress all around, both on the individual, the family, the country, the globe.
So with respect to that latter category, not at all unlike the general population, separation from family issues, and I think it's probably greater stress when you're on the road, so to speak, for a year and not able to help your spouse deal with all of the things that go on at home. So that's got to wear on them too, in addition to the general stress of simply being where they are and the condition that they're in.
I think soldiers are just as concerned about and their family back home when they deploy. That's probably one of their greatest concerns is how is my family doing. And if you look at the MHAT studies, the fifth one in particular, you know, we've had some soldiers who've been deployed for 15 months, and if you look at the graphs and how they plot marital distress, you'll see that over the months, the percentage of soldiers experiencing marital distress goes up almost proportionally as the months progress. So it is, it's a significant challenge, and the family members back home certainly experience significant challenges as well. They're concerned about their soldier, safety of their soldier, and then certainly if you have children, being able to, doing the single parenting thing can certainly be stressful as well. So.
Well, we've got just about a minute left, Doctor, so if there's anything you'd like to give a shout-out to the folks here back in Auburn? Or...
Yeah, you know, I'd just like to say Auburn is a wonderful community. We loved it there, and just say that my prayers go out to Auburn and to all of the soldiers and their families everywhere, and especially at this time, Fort Hood.
Thank you for joining us, Lieutenant Colonel Holcomb. We're glad to have you on the show, and we hope to have you back to speak a little bit more on that PTSD subject. We want to remind our listeners we will be back next week at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Until then, this is Dr. Mark Vaughn and Larry Finney and Dr. Holcomb saying to all of you, stay in good health.